Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest indictment in the Mueller investigation announced on Friday by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, which accuses 13 Russians and three Russian entities of intervening in the 2016 election to help Trump and hurt Hillary Clinton. James Risen, the Pulitzer Prize-winning former investigative reporter with the New York Times, who is now the senior national security correspondent at The Intercept, where he has an article, "Is Donald Trump a Traitor?" joins us. We'll discuss what could be the most consequential covert operation since Germany put Lenin on a train to Petrograd in 1917, and how much Russia's new czar, the former KGB Colonel Vladimir Putin, has created a state run by a consortium of spies, gangsters, and oligarchs in which Putin regulates the oligarchs, handing out state assets and government contracts in exchange for political favors and off-the-books covert operations and influence campaigns, which are augmented by legions of trolls and self-financed internet criminals. Then we'll look into the possibility that something might actually be done in response to the latest mass shooting beyond the usual sop of thoughts and prayers, this time led by the young survivors at the Florida High School, who held an impassioned rally over the weekend calling out President Trump and lawmakers on the NRA payroll with chants of "shame on you" and "vote them out." An expert on the Second Amendment, Saul Cornell, the chair of history at Fordham University, whose latest book is "The Second Amendment Goes to Court," joins us to discuss the planned march by the students on Washington on March the 24th and how the Second Amendment has been misinterpreted to give unlimited rights to a small minority of gun fanatics at the expense of the rights of Americans to have, as the Founding Fathers intended, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Then finally, we will speak with Ganesh Shataraman, a professor of law at Vanderbilt Law School and a longtime advisor to Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is the author of a new book just out, "The Crisis of the Middle Class Constitution: Why Economic Inequality Threatens Our Republic." We'll discuss how the United States was uniquely set up as an egalitarian democracy in opposition to the feudal rule of the British aristocracy, and that if rising income inequality is not addressed, it will destroy the American Constitution. And joining us now is James Risen, the senior national security correspondent at The Intercept and a former investigative journalist with The New York Times and author of The New York Times bestseller State of War, among other books. In 2006, he won the Pulitzer Prize for his stories about warrantless wiretapping by the NSA. And in 2007, he was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And his latest book is "Pay Any Price, Greed, Power, and Endless War." And he has an article at The Intercept, "Is Donald Trump a Traitor?" Welcome to Background Briefing, James Risen.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, James. And short of answering your question, is Donald Trump a traitor? What we learned from the Mueller indictment is that the Russians were actively involved in helping elect him and hurting Hillary Clinton. The National Security Advisor, speaking at a security conference in Munich, said that the proof was incontrovertible that the Russians meddled in our election, and Donald Trump has already castigated General McMaster. So it's a bit odd, isn't it, to have a president of the United States who is not responding to this indictment from his own Justice Department in terms of a foreign adversary attacking the United States. Instead, he's turned it all about himself and claiming vindication. An historical analogy perhaps would be if after Pearl Harbor, FDR invited Emperor Hirohito over to the White House for a sushi dinner.
Well, I think Trump knows that, and the reason he's doing it is because this points the finger at him and his campaign, and he knows that's where this is all headed. He is afraid that he is going to be charged, or that people close to him will be charged with enabling or colluding with this what Mueller described as a coordinated effort by Russia to damage Clinton and elect Trump. And so he, I think, understands the consequences for him of this. And so he is insistent on continuing to lie and mislead the attempt to mislead the public about the Mueller investigation, and he's attempting to discredit it.
But a normal person, let alone a president of the United States, would be embarrassed by these revelations. He wouldn't want, surely, the American people in the world to feel that his election was illegitimate and that the Russians put him in there. You would think he'd be the first to want to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, it makes you wonder whether there's something to it. That's, to me, the all of the evidence of his efforts to discredit Mueller and the congressional investigations into Russian meddling and the efforts that suggest obstruction of justice by Trump of firing Comey and pressuring Sessions and putting pressure on the intelligence community. It all suggests that there's a man who has something to hide. And I think that's, the common sense look at his behavior suggests that he is hiding there's something he may know about what happened. And I think that's the next big shoe to drop in this investigation. We now have a very strong evidence that the Russians were behind the meddling in the election. And now the next question to be answered more conclusively than it has been so far is, what was the Trump campaign colluding with Russia?
So in terms of the premise that in the introduction this former KGB colonel, Vladimir Putin, has created a state-run run by a consortium of spies, gangsters, and oligarchs in which Putin regulates the oligarchs, handing out state assets and government contracts in exchange for political favors and off-the-books covert operations and influence campaigns, which are augmented by legions of trolls and self-financed criminals. That's my conclusion, that we actually have a total state effectively built in and around the image of a kind of wannabe KGB spy. The most talented KGB officers were assigned to NATO capitals and New York and Washington. He was languishing in East Germany through a series of extraordinary events under a addled Yeltsin. He became the head of the KGB and then the president of Prime Minister and then the President of Russia. But it seems to that he's brought with him this kind of KGB mindset of Glavny Vrag or Glavny Protivnik, the main enemy, the main adversary. And he doesn't do anything for Russia except loot it. But his entire focus seems to be on the U.S. And he's built a state around himself. This is a kind of extraordinary hybrid of gangsters, oligarchs, and spies, or Siloviki, as they call them.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that's why Trump fits so well into that narrative, in my opinion. I think he is, I don't think he ever seriously thought about becoming president, and it was all just some kind of weird game for him and a branding effort at first. But once it became a serious enterprise, I think he's probably willing to do almost anything. And so that's the next question. Did he or people around him collude and cooperate with what we now know was an organized effort by the Putin regime to tip the scales of the election in favor of Trump? And I don't think it is very hard to explain or understand why he would have wanted Trump instead of Hillary Clinton. Trump is kind of a fool, and you could easily see him being a dupe. He's a shameless narcissist who just wants attention and, doesn't really understand the world. So I think if you're Putin, the motivation for supporting Trump is clear. You want chaos and paralysis in the United States, and that's good for Putin.
Well, you're almost describing it as Polesny Durak. Polesny Durak, the Russian word for a useful idiot. And obviously, yeah. In this context, Jill Stein is a useful idiot. So is Oliver Stone. A lot of Americans have bought in to the narrative, which forever, whatever reasons, even the editors of The Nation, it mystifies me why people on the left see somehow Putin as a socialist or something, when he's a right-wing religious fascist.
Well, I think that is, it's an interesting phenomenon where I think they are, I think there's a long history in the United States, in the left in the United States, of despairing of liberals and more moderate progressives, and that they want, they want to shake up the system. And so their focus and their perspective is usually from domestic political viewpoint. And so they sometimes overlook the flaws of the more distant people who they somehow think might be doing what they want.
And again, I'm speaking with James Risen, the senior national security correspondent at The Intercept and a former investigative journalist with The New York Times and the author of The New York Times.
That happened with on the left with Stalin, too,
Well, it's true. I mean, there were people here in Los Angeles in after the Hitler-Stalin Pact demonstrating in front of the Lockheed Aircraft Company out here in Burbank because Lockheed was selling bombers to the British.
Right.
I mean, talk about useful idiots. But in any case, I was going to just reintroduce you in terms of your latest book, Pay Any Price,
sure.
Greed, Power, and Endless War, and your article at The Intercept, Is Donald Trump a Traitor? Going through the indictment, obviously it was 37 pages. It was extremely thorough. It indicates that the U.S. It indicates that Mueller has access to all of the top intelligence, because it's clear that the U.S. were watching these people in St. Petersburg at the so-called IRA. But this character, Prigozhin, who's known as Putin's cook, he seems to be a sort of an example of that, what I was mentioning in the opening of first of all, Putin sprang him from jail. He was jailed by the Soviets for robbery and prostitution. But Putin sprung him very early on, and he's turned him into a billionaire. He gets government contracts to supply all the food to the schools in Russia. But in exchange for a few billions state contracts, he kicks back a few million to fund these off-the-book operations. And that's a perfect piece of spycraft, isn't it, where you don't have your fingerprints going back even to your own intelligence services?
Yeah, well, I think, in the United States, we have contractors who do work for the intelligence community and the defense community, and it's not exactly the same thing, but there's some similarities where you have someone like Eric Prince and Blackwater that does work for the CIA, and so I think, granted, the way that the Soviets or the Russians do it is very different, but it doesn't, just because this company in St. Petersburg is not nominally part of the Russian intelligence, doesn't mean that this wasn't a Russian intelligence operation.
Well, it looks like the people that they sent over here were intelligence officers.
Right.
And
so I think, it's essentially a contractor.
Right.
To Russian intelligence.
But I would think the main difference is that the contractors here in the United States, which is really an example of what my friend Bob Baer calls Nigeria on the Potomac, the contractors
right.
have caused nothing but trouble. It was, after all, the contractors who failed to properly screen Edward Snowden after he had been caught by the CIA. Back in 1998, breaking into the CIA's crown jewels, and the contractors that somehow failed again with this huge loss of NSA data which the so-called shadow brokers got hold of, which is essentially weaponized China and Russia against the United States. They haven't pulled the trigger. But our contractors have been, and of course the OPM hack was, the people responsible for that were a government contractor who didn't secure the data on all of these government employees. So that would be a fundamental difference, isn't it? The Russians seem
No, it's not the, same thing, but it's a very, to me, the fact that this is listed as a private company in St. Petersburg doesn't mean that it's, this wasn't a Russian intelligence operation. And I think one of the interesting things to me is how, you know, in this case, Mueller focuses his efforts on the Facebook bots and the fake news. And we've yet to see him issue indictments directly on the hack of the DNC.
Right. There are many strands to this because it was an intelligence operation with many strands. And, you know, just one strand, if it's as it appears to be that Jill Stein and the Green Party were useful idiots, then the votes that she got in those three key swing states were greater than Hillary's loss. So it's difficult.
Yeah, no, I think, as you said, there's a lot of different threads to this. And I've been impressed that Mueller seems to be kind of moving very deliberately through each strand. You know, it was difficult to kind of see at first with the Manafort indictment and some of the other indictments exactly what direction he was going to be taking. But with this latest set of indictments, you know, things are beginning to come into focus, I think, a little bit more.
I thought it was clever also, Rod Rosenstein, to let Trump off the hook in this case. So he doesn't give him any provocation to fire him, because clearly Trump is going crazy with this situation. Apparently he rails around the White House all the time about this Russia investigation, because it's as I think the title of your article suggests, is Donald Trump a traitor? He may well be a traitor.
I think that's the next, you know, one of the next, the final steps of this thing is that, you know, where, you know, Mueller is looking, it strikes me that the state of play of what we now know is, we now know pretty conclusively that Russia meddled in the election. We also know that Trump and people around him, that there is a lot of evidence that Trump and people around him have sought to obstruct Mueller's investigation or the investigations in Congress. And so the area that we still need more information on is why is Trump so interested in shutting down Mueller's investigation? And that raises a question that perhaps it's because of collusion. And he's afraid of what Mueller is going to find. And so that's the middle part that we still have to focus on. And I think it's almost as if Mueller is going to come at that from both directions, both from the Russian side and from the side of the obstruction cases and the conspiracy cases that he's building against Manafort and some of the other people.
Well, just in closing, there's an assumption, though, that Putin has some kind of blackmail over Trump because his behavior is so crazy and strange and counterintuitive in terms of an innocent man, which he appears not to be. So is that, at the end of the day, what it could be, could explain it, blackmail?
I think that's one of several possibilities. It's either that, or it could be that there's something besides collusion that Trump is afraid that Mueller is going to find out. You know, something about his finances or his personal life, or it could just be that there were too many people in the Trump campaign who knew about the Russian meddling and they were in contact with the Russians, and that, you know, that you could build a mosaic of a conspiracy.
Right.
That's a real interesting question.
Sure. And it may well go back a longer way. I mean, what explains why he went after Obama with this canard about not having a birth certificate. That seems to be the same purpose that Putin signed him with, which is to divide America. Czech intelligence goes back to 77 with files on the family, the wife of the kids, the mother, who he pretty much deserted. They were spent all of their summers in behind the Iron Curtain. So there are ties to this family that are quite deep and long. So we can only wait. And I thank you for joining us, Sir James Risen.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with James Risen, who's the senior national security correspondent at The Intercept and a former investigative journalist with The New York Times and author of the New York Times bestseller State of War. In 2006, he won the Pulitzer Prize for his stories about warrantless wiretapping by the NSA. And in 2007, he was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And his latest book is Pay Any Price, Greed, Power, and Endless War. And he has an article at The Intercept, Is Donald Trump a Traitor? We can take a brief station break and back looking into whether something will actually be done following this latest gun massacre led by the young students who held a rally over the weekend from the Florida High School and planned to march on Washington on March the 24th.